before the gigantic doors to the king's fortress, and stared up. Chiseled of ebon ice, they had to be 100 feet tall. There was no way I could open them. But the voice was coming from beyond them, out there in the dreaded, icy, unseely hell. Elaborate symbols decorated the high arch into which the doors were set, and I suddenly understood there was a passcode. Unfortunately, I couldn't reach any of the symbols to press them, and there was no convenient 100-foot ladder propped nearby. I felt him then, almost as if he rose up behind me. I heard a command come out of my own mouth, words I was incapable of uttering with a human tongue, and the enormous door swung silently open. The icy prison was exactly as I'd dreamed it, with a single significant difference. It was empty. In my nightmares, the prison had always been inhabited by countless monstrous unseelie who had squatted high on cliffs above me, hurling chunks of ice down the ravine as if they were bowlers from hell, and I was the pin. Others darted low, taking stabs at me with giant beaks. The moment I'd stepped through the king's mighty doors, I braced myself for an attack. It didn't come. The stark Arctic terrain was a great empty hall of a prison with rusted-out bars. Even devoid of those once incarcerated, despair clung to every ridge, blew down from the mountainous cliffs and seeped up from bottomless chasms. I tilted my head back. There was no sky. Cliffs of black ice stretched up farther than the eye could follow. A blue glow emanated from the cliffs, the only light in the place. Blue-black fog gusted from crevices in the cliffs. The moon would never rise here. The sun would never set. Seasons would not pass. Color would never splash this landscape. Death in this place would be a blessing. There was no hope, no expectation that life would ever change. For hundreds of thousands of years, the Unseelie had abided in these chilling, killing, sunless cliffs. Their need, their emptiness had stained the very stuff from which their prison was fashioned. Once, long ago, it had been a fine, if strange, world. Now it was radioactive to the core. I knew that if I remained long on this barren terrain, I would lose all will to leave. I would come to believe that this Arctic wasteland, this frozen oubliette of misery, was all that existed, all that had ever existed, and worse, was exactly what I deserved. Was I too late? Was I supposed to have answered this summons long before the prison walls fell? Was that why I kept seeing all those hourglasses with black sand running out? But I kept hearing the voice in my dreams. And now, when I was awake, that had to mean there was still time. For what? I scanned the many caves cut into the sheer facade of jagged black cliffs, frigid homes the Unseelie had clawed into the unforgiving landscape. Nothing stirred. I knew, without even looking, I would find no creature comforts within. Those without hope didn't feather nests. They endured. I was startled by a sudden deep sorrow that they'd been reduced to such straits. What a vindictive act on the Queen's part! They might have been brethren to the Light Court, not forced to shiver for eternity in the cold and dark. On sunny beaches, in tropical climes, perhaps they would have become something less monstrous, evolved as the king had. But no, the vicious queen hadn't been satisfied with imprisoning them. She'd wanted them to suffer. And for what crimes? What had they done to deserve it, other than be born without her consent? I was disturbed by the turn of my thoughts. I was feeling pity for the Unseelie and thinking the king had evolved. It had to be this place's memory residue. I crunched over iced drifts, scaled jagged outcroppings, and turned down a narrow pathway between cliffs that were hundreds of feet high. The thin fissure through which I passed was another of my childhood terrors. Barely 2.5 feet wide, the narrow passage made me feel crushed, claustrophobic, yet I knew my route went this way. With each step I took, my feelings of bipolarity grew. I was Mac, who hated Unseelie and wanted nothing more than to see the prison walls restored, the monstrous killers contained. I was the concubine, who loved the king and all of his children. I even loved this place. There had been happy moments here before the bitch queen broke everything in those final seconds before she died. Speaking of dying, I should have. I wasn't breathing. I had no blood flow, no oxygen. I should have been mortally frostbitten the moment I'd passed through the silver. There was no plausible way I could be walking through these conditions. Yet I was. I was so cold that dying would have been a welcome relief. It was easy to see why my child's mind had thrilled to the poem, The Cremation of Sam McGee. The notion of being warm again was nearly beyond my comprehension. Half a dozen times, I considered aborting my unwanted mission. I could turn around, go back to the mansion, slip through the silver, find Jericho, resume our plans, and pretend none of this had ever happened. He'd never tell. He had a few dark secrets of his own to keep. I could forget I was the concubine, forget that I'd ever had a past existence. I mean, really, who wanted to be in love with someone they'd never even met, at least not in this lifetime? The thought of the Unseelie King was a big, messy knot of emotions inside me that I preferred to leave tangled and unexamined.
Hurry! You must!
Razor-edged snow began to fall. Deep in caves, things chimed horrible, grating sounds. Jericho had told me that there were creatures so twisted and monstrous in the Unseelie prison that they'd stay even if the walls came down, because they liked their home. How was I supposed to have made it through if the place had still been fully populated? For that matter, how was I supposed to have found my way here to begin with? How had things been orchestrated to bring me here, to this moment, in this way, and more importantly, by whom? Whose puppet was I? I resented being here. I couldn't have turned back for anything. I have no idea how long I trudged through despair and futility, so palpable that every step felt like slogging through wet cement. Temporal divisions did not exist in this place. There were no watches or clocks, no minutes or hours, no night or day, no sun or moon, just relentless black and white and blue matched by relentless misery. How many times had I walked this path while I slept? If I'd been having the dream since birth, more than 8,000. Repetition had made every step instinctual. I skirted dangerously thin ice that I couldn't have known was there. I intuited the location of bottomless drifts. I knew the shape and number of the entrances in the caves and the black walls high above my head. I recognized landmarks, too insignificant to be noticed by anyone who hadn't walked this path countless times. If my heart could have pounded, it would have. I had no idea what awaited me. If I'd ever gotten to the end of my journey in my dreams, I'd blocked it thoroughly. It had always been a woman's voice commanding me, ordering me to obey. Had my inner concubine been taking over every time I'd fallen asleep and fed me dreams, trying to force me to remember and make me do something? Derok had told me that some said the Unseelie King was entombed in black ice, slumbering in his prison eternally. Had he been tricked into a trap, and he'd been reaching out to me in the dreaming to teach me all I needed to know to free him? Was that what my whole life had been about? Despite the love I knew he and the concubine shared, I resented that my mortal existence had been used up without regard for what it might have been, what I might have been. Hadn't she lived long enough once before, waiting for him to wake up, to pull his head out and live? It was no wonder I'd always felt so psychotic in high school. I'd been walking around since childhood with the suppressed memories of another fantastical lifetime embedded in my subconscious. I suddenly found everything about myself suspect. Did I really love Sunshine so much, or was it a leftover feeling from her? Was I really crazy about fashion, or was I obsessing over the concubine's closet of 1,000 stunning gowns? Was I truly enthralled by beautifying my surroundings, or was it an outlet for her need to change the face of her confinement while she waited for her lover? Did I even like the color pink? I tried to remember how many of her dresses had been some shade of rose.
"Ah!"
I said. It came out as a deep, booming gong. I didn't want to be her. I wanted to be me. But as far as I knew, I hadn't even been born. A terrible thought occurred to me. Maybe I wasn't the concubine reincarnated. Maybe I was the concubine, and somebody had forced me to drink from the cauldron. Right. Then sent me to a plastic surgeon and recreated my face, I muttered. I didn't look anything like the concubine. My head was spinning with fears, each more disturbing than the last. I stopped, as if a homing beacon that had been beeping faster and faster inside me had abruptly become a single long sound. I was there, wherever there was supposed to be, whatever fate awaited me, whoever had brought me here was just over the next ridge of black ice, some 20 feet away. I stood still so long that I iced again. Despair filled me. I didn't want to look. I didn't want to top the ridge. What if I didn't like what I found? Had I blocked this memory because I was going to die here? What if I was too late? The prison was empty. There was no point in going on. I should just give in, turn to ice permanently, and forget. I didn't want to be the concubine. I didn't want to find the king. I didn't want to stay in Faerie or be his forever love. I wanted to be human. I wanted to live in Dublin and Ashford and love my mom and dad. I wanted to fight with Jericho barons and run a bookstore one day when our world was rebuilt. I wanted to watch Danny grow up and fall in love for the first time. I wanted to replace that old woman at the Abbey with Cat and take tropical vacations on human beaches. I stood, torn by indecision. Go greet my destiny like a good little automaton? Freeze and forget, as the overwhelming stain of futility in this place was trying to convince me to do. Or turn and walk away. That thought appealed to me a lot. It smacked of personal will, of choosing to set sail on my own course and terms. If I never crested that ridge, and never discovered the end of this dream that had been plaguing me all my life, would I be free of it? There was no higher power forcing me to go on, no divine being charging me with tracking the book and getting the walls back up. Just because I could track it didn't mean I had to. I didn't have to fight the Fae. I was a free agent. I could leave right now, move far away, shirk responsibility, look out for myself, and leave this mess to somebody else. It was a strange new world. I could stop resisting, adapt, and make the best of it. If I'd proved nothing else to myself over the past few months, I was good at adapting and figuring out how to go on when things weren't remotely what I'd thought they were. Still, could I really walk away now and never know what all this had been about? Live with unresolved bipolarity shaping all my choices? Did I want to live that way? A conflicted, screwed-up, half-afraid existence of someone who chickened out at the critical moment? Safety is a fence, and fences are for sheep, I'd told Rowena. Were it put to the test, she'd replied tartly, I wonder where you would truly stand. This was the test. I cracked the ice, shook it from my skin, and headed for the top of the ridge. In that moment, just before I could see over the crest, a final memory I'd been suppressing surfaced, a last desperate bid to get me to tuck tail and run. It nearly worked. Once I topped the ridge, there would be a coffin chiseled of the same blue-black ice from which the four stones had been carved, standing in the center of a snow-covered dais, surrounded by sheer cliffs. A chilling, bitter wind would gust down and tangle my hair. I would stand, debating before moving to the sepulchre. The lid would be elaborately carved with ancient symbols. I would press my hands to the runes at 10 and 2, slide the lid away and look inside. and I would scream. My steps faltered. I closed my eyes, but try as I might, I couldn't see what was inside the coffin that made me scream. Apparently, I was going to have to actually perform the deed to know how my recurring nightmare ended. I squared my shoulders, marched to the top, and stopped, startled. There was the icy tomb, elaborately carved and embellished, precisely as I'd just pictured it. It certainly didn't look big enough to hold the king. But who was he? This was a new twist. In all my nightmares, there'd never been anyone else here but me and whoever was inside that tomb. Tall, beautifully formed, ice-white and smooth as marble with long jet hair, he sat on a bank of crusted snow beside the coffin, face buried in his hands. I stood at the top of the ridge, staring. Wind gusted down from high cliffs and tangled my hair. Was he a residue? A memory? There was none of that fading at the edges, no transparency. Was he my king? As soon as I thought the question, I knew he wasn't. Then who was he? What I could see of his ivory skin, a hand on his cheek, one sleek, strong white arm, raced with dark shapes and symbols. Was it possible there were 5 Unseelie princes? This wasn't one of the 3 who'd raped me, and he had no wings, which meant he wasn't War, Cruz, either. So who was he?
"It's about bloody damn time,"
he tossed over his shoulder, without turning.
"Been waiting weeks."
I jerked. He'd spoken in that awful chiming, and while my mind understood it, my ears would never get used to it. That was only part of what made me jerk, though. Needing to crack my ice was another part of it. But the majority was horror at the realization of who I was looking at. "Christian McKelter?" I said, and grimaced. I was speaking the language of my enemies, a language I'd never learned, with a mouth incapable of shaping it. I couldn't get back to my side of the mirror soon enough. "Is that you?"
"In the flesh, lass. Well, mostly."
I wasn't sure if he meant it was mostly him or mostly flesh. I didn't ask. He raised his head and shot me a savage look over his shoulder. He was beautiful. He was wrong. His eyes were full black. He blinked and had whites again. In another life, I would have gone crazy over Christian McKelter. Or at least I would have gone nuts for the Christian I met back in Dublin. He was so different now that if he hadn't spoken to me, I'm not sure how long it might have taken me to figure out who he was. The good-looking college student with the great body, druid heart, and killer smile was gone. As I watched shapes and symbols move under his skin, I wondered, if we weren't inside the prison that leached color from everything, would his tattoos still be black or kaleidoscopic? I stood still too long and was suddenly staring at him through a thin sheeting of ice. He'd been sitting still and was ice-free. Why? Then there was that short-sleeved shirt he was wearing. Wasn't he cold? When I cracked it, he spoke.
"The majority of what happens here is in your mind. Whatever you permit yourself to feel intensifies."
The words were dark bells hammered on a bent xylophone. I shuddered. I could hear the hint of Scots Brogue in the chiming, and the element of humanity in the inhuman tongue made it all the more disturbing. "You mean if I don't think about icing, I won't?" I said. My stomach growled, and I was suddenly frosted with thick, creamy blue icing.
"Thought about food, did you now, lass?"
Amusement leavened the tubular tones, made it slightly more bearable. He stood up, but made no move toward me.
"You'll find you do that a lot here."
Thought about turning the icing to ice. It was that simple. When I stepped forward, it shattered from my skin. "Does this mean if I think of a warm tropical beach?"
"No. The fabric of this place is what it is. You can make it worse, but you can never make it better. You can only destroy, not create. That was a bit of added nastiness on the Queen's part. I suspect it's not icing on you, but flakes of frost creamed with the innards of a thing you'd rather not look at too closely."
I glanced at the sepulchre. I couldn't help it. It hulked, dark and silent, the boogeyman of 20 years of bad dreams. I'd been trying to ignore it, but couldn't. It gnawed at my awareness. I would stand beside it. I would open it, look inside, and scream. Right. Not in a hurry to do that. I looked back at Christian. What was he doing here? Whatever had brought me to this place had consumed all my nightly hours for most of my life. I was entitled to a few minutes of my own before whatever was fated happened. If they were indeed my own. It didn't escape me that I'd just found exactly what I needed. How lucky to find the fifth of the 5 druids necessary to perform the ritual right here, next to whatever it was I'd been led to. Too bad I didn't believe in luck anymore. I felt bitterly manipulated. But by whom and why? What happened to you? I asked.
What happened to me?
Laughter screeched like metal spikes across chalkboard bells.
That would be you, lass. You happened to me. You fed me unseelie.
I was appalled. This was what feeding him the flesh of Dark Fae had done to him? Whatever transformation Christian had begun back on that world where we'd dried our clothes by the lock had continued at breakneck speed. He looked half-human, half-fae, and in this place of shadows and ice, he was leaning toward the unseelie, not their light brethren. With a few finishing touches, he'd look just like one of the princes. I bit my lip. What could I say? I'm sorry? Does it hurt? Are you turning into a monster inside, too? Maybe he'd look better once he was out in the real world, where there were other colors besides black, white, and blue. He gave me a darker version of that killer smile, white teeth flashing against cobalt lips in a white marble face.
Oh, your heart weeps for me. I see it in your eyes,
he mocked. The smile faded, but the hostility in his gaze grew.
It should. I'm beginning to look like one of them, aren't I? No handy mirrors around here. Don't know what my face looks like. I doubt I want to.
Eating unseelie did this to you? I don't understand. I've eaten unseelie. So did Malooch and Darok, Fiona and O'Banion. Then there's Jane and his men. Nothing like this happened to me or any of them.
I suspect it began happening on Halloween. I wasn't ruined well enough.
The smile morphed from killer to murderous.
I blame your parents for that. We'll be seeing who's the finer druid now. We'll be having words when we meet again.
From the expression on that white, chiseled face, I doubted they would be words. Was Jericho the one who tattooed you? He raised a brow.
So, it's Jericho, is it? No. My uncle Stagus and Kian did the work. But he should have checked me when I was finished, and he didn't. He let me go into the ritual unprotected.
And just how pissy would your uncles have gotten if he'd tried? It was instinct to defend him.
He still should have. He knew more about protection runes than we did. His knowledge is older than ours, which is bloody inconceivable to me.
What happened that night in the stones, Christian? Neither he nor Barons had ever told me. He rubbed his face with a hand, skin rasping over blue-black stubble.
I suppose it doesn't matter who knows now. I thought to hide my shame, but it looks as if I've ended up wearing it.
He began to walk a slow circle around the black coffin, ice crunching beneath his boots. It was a well-worn path. He'd been here a while. I tried to focus on him, but my gaze kept sliding unwillingly to the tomb. The ice was thick, but if I stared, I could see a shape through the frosted sides. The lid was thinner than the rest of the coffin. Was that the blurred outline of a face through the smoky ice? I yanked my gaze to Christian's too white face. And?
We tried to summon the ancient god of the Dragaar, a sect of dark sorcerers. They'd worshipped it long before the Fae came to town. It was our only hope to counter Darok's magic. We succeeded in raising it. I felt it come alive. The great stones that weighted it deep beneath the earth fell away.
He paused, letting the echo of his chiming bounce off the walls in ever-diminishing decibels until the icy mountains fell silent.
It came for me. Straight for me. Gone in for my soul. Ever play chicken, Mac?
I shook my head.
I lost. It's a wonder it didn't decimate Behrens. I felt it blast past me and into him. Then it was just gone.
So how was that responsible for what's happening to you?
It touched me.
He looked repulsed.
I don't want to talk about it. Then you gave me the blood of Dark Fae, and that coupled with the 3 years I've been in here.
3 years? The words exploded from me in a cacophony of such dissonance that I was surprised the chiming didn't start an avalanche. You've been in the Unseelie prison for 3 years?
No. I've been in this place for only a few weeks, but I've been in the Silvers for 3 years by my count.
But less than a month has passed on the outside since I saw you last.
So, it's passing faster for me in here,
he murmured, which is exactly the opposite of what usually happens. Usually a few hours in here are days out there. He shrugged, muscle and tattoos rippled.
Things don't seem to be working right where I'm concerned. I've become a wee bit unpredictable.
His smile was tight. His eyes were full black again. It was on the tip of my tongue to apologize, but I was more pragmatic than I used to be, and I was getting tired of being blamed for things. When I found you in that desert, you were dying. Would you rather I'd buried you in the Silvers? The corners of his mouth twisted.
Aye, there's the rub, isn't it? I'm glad I'm alive. And you've no idea what that does to me. I used to be part of a clan that protected against the Fae, upheld the compact, and kept the truce between us and them. Now, I'm turning into one of the bloody buggers. I used to think the Keltar were the good guys. Now I don't believe there are good guys.
There'd better be good guys. I need 5 of them to perform the ritual. My gaze slid to the coffin again. I shook myself and looked away, assuming I got out of here with my sanity and life.
See for yourself and decide. I'll fit in with them now just fine. Uncle Dagus once opened himself up to 13 of the most evil druids that ever existed, and still can't exorcise parts of them.
So Dagus was the inhabited or possessed that the prophecy had mentioned.
And Uncle Cian was trapped in a Silver for nearly 1,000 years, as if he wasn't enough of a barbarian to begin with. He thinks all power is good, and would do anything he had to in order to keep himself and his wife alive and happy. Then there's Da, who'll be useless to you. He took one look at the two of them when they showed up, and swore off druid arts forever.
That's unacceptable, I said flatly. I need all 5 of you.
Good luck with that.
We looked at each other in silence. He smiled thinly after a moment.
I knew someone would come. I just didn't expect it to be you. I thought my uncles would find this place, so I'd better stick close. I couldn't find the bloody way out anyway.
What have you been eating?
Same as we're breathing. It's part of hell. No food, no breath. But hunger. Oh, the hunger never goes away. Your stomach gnaws at itself constantly. You just don't die from it. And sex! Oh, Christ, the need!
The look he raked over me chilled. It wasn't nearly as bottomless as a prince's, but it wasn't human either.
You lost in this place, but you can't jack off. Nothing comes of it but greater lust. I lost a few days to a bad spot there. Nearly lost my fucking mind. If you and I had sex...
Thanks, but no, I said swiftly. My life was already too complicated, and if it hadn't been, this wasn't the place I'd choose to complicate it more.
I suspect it wouldn't work anyway,
he finished dryly.
Am I that revolting, lass?
Just a little scary. He looked away. Still sexy as hell, though, I added. He looked back, flashed me a smile. There's the Christian I know, I tried to tease. You're still in there.
Once I get out of the Silvers, I'm hoping it won't be like this. I won't be like this.
That would make two of us who hoped things would go back to normal in a hurry once we left this place behind. I glanced at the sepulcher. I was going to have to open it sometime, face it and get it over with. Was it the king? Did he terrify me? Why? What could possibly be in there that would make me scream? He followed my gaze.
So now you know why I'm sitting here. Why are you here? How did you find this place?
I've been dreaming about it every night since I was a child, as if I was programmed to come here. His mouth twisted.
Aye, she does that. Fucks with us.
She who? He nodded at the coffin.
The queen.
I blinked. What queen? This wasn't making any sense.
Avil, queen of the Seelie.
That's who's in the coffin?
Who were you expecting to find?
All hesitation gone, I moved to the side of the tomb and stared through the lid. Beneath smoky ice and runes, I could see the hint of pale skin, golden hair, a slight form.
We've got to get her out of here and fast.
He said.
If she's even still alive. I can't tell through the ice. I tried to open it but couldn't budge it. A few times I thought she moved. Once I could have sworn she made a sound.
I barely heard him. Why would the queen be here of all places? Valaine said he was keeping her safe in Faerie. Valaine had lied. What else had he lied about? Had he brought her here? If not, who had? Why? And why would opening the lid make me scream? I raked my hair back from my face with both hands and tugged on it, staring down. Something was eluding me. Are you absolutely certain it's the Queen of the Seelie in this coffin? Why would the queen have been summoning me, the concubine? How did she even know who I was once I'd been reincarnated? It wasn't as if I still looked like the concubine. It was absurd to think she'd accidentally chosen me. None of this made sense. I couldn't think of any reason seeing the Queen of the Seelie would make me scream.
I am certain. My ancestors have been painting her for millennia. I'd know her anywhere, even through the ice.
Why would she call me? What do I have to do with any of this?
My uncles say she has meddled with our clan for thousands of years, preparing us for the moment of our greatest need. Uncle Kian saw her 4 or 5 years back, standing behind the balustrade of our great hall, watching us. He said she came to him later in sleep, and told him that she'd been killed in the not-so-distant future, and needed us to perform certain tasks to prevent it, and the destruction of the world as we knew it from coming to pass. She foretold that the walls would come down. We did our best to keep them up. He said that even in the dreaming, she seemed hunted, weak. I suspect now she was projecting herself from her tomb here in this prison somehow. She said she would return to tell him more, but never did. It sounds like she must have meddled with your family as well.
She'd used me. The Queen of the Fae had figured out who I was and used me, and I resented it. Though I knew she was a far distant successor, not the original queen who had refused to make me, the concubine, I amended, fey and grant the king's wish, and despite that she wasn't actually the bitch who'd sown hatred and revenge when she might have used her vast power for good, how dare any queen of the Seelie use me to rescue her? Me, the concubine! I hated her without even seeing her. Would it never end? Would I eternally be a pawn on their chessboard? Would I just keep getting reborn or forced to drink from the cauldron or whatever had happened to me to screw up my memories and used over and over again? I turned away, bile rising.
What's important now is that we get her out of here. I can't go back the way I came. The silver that dumped me was 2 stories up in the side of a cliff. I was stunned by the fall and can't find the bloody thing again. Where'd you come in, lass?
I dragged my gaze from the coffin to him. How to get him out of here was an entirely new problem I hadn't even thought about. Well, you certainly can't go out the way I came in, I muttered.
Why the bloody hell not?
I wondered how much he'd learned about Fey lore in this place. Maybe my sources were wrong and Barons had died from some other coincidental cause, not because of the mirror at all. Maybe Christian would hear my answer, laugh at me and tell me my version was a bunch of baloney, that lots of people in Fae could use that mirror, or that Cruz's curse had messed it up. because I came in through the silver in the king's bedchamber. He was silent a moment.
Not funny, lass.
I didn't say anything, just looked at him.
Not possible either,
he said flatly. I pushed my hands into my pockets and waited for him to deal with it.
That legend is famous on every world I've visited. There are only two who can pass through the king's silver,
he said. Maybe Cruce's curse changed it.
The king's silver was the first he ever made, and of a completely different composition. It was unaffected. It continued to be used as a method of execution long after Cruce's time.
Damn, I'd really been hoping he wouldn't say that. I turned my back on him and moved to the side of the coffin. The Queen of the Fae would make me scream. I wondered why. I was sick of wondering. It was time for truth. Behind me, Christian was still talking.
And, duh, you're neither of those.
Dunna be duhing me, laddie. I mocked something he'd said to me once, taking a stab at humor before my life got totally wrecked by whatever I was about to discover. I pressed my hands to the runes at 10 and 2. Something clicked. There was a soft hiss of air as the lid raised beneath my hands. I could feel the spring in it. All I had to do now was push it aside.
Only the unsealed king and his concubine can use that mirror.
Christian was still talking. I slid the lid away and looked down. I was silent for a long moment, absorbing it. Then I screamed. To my credit, I didn't scream for long. But the short burst in their hellish language was enough to disturb precariously packed snow and ice. My chiming scream echoed off sheer cliffs. Unlike an echo, however, it grew louder with each rebound, and I heard a rumble that could presage only one thing. An avalanche! My head whipped around. Grab her! Christian shook his head, cursing.
Christ, you open your bag of stones, you feed me on Celia, you scream, you're a walking...
Just grab her and run! Now! He raced to the coffin, then stood, hesitating. What's wrong with you? Pick her up!
She's the Queen of the Fae.
Awe tinged his voice.
It's forbidden to touch the Queen.
Fine, then stay here with her and get buried alive, I snapped. He scooped her up. She was so frail, so wasted by whatever wastes fairies, that I could have carried her myself. But I had no desire to touch her. Ever. Which was really kind of funny in a dark and disturbing way if I thought about it. So I didn't. Ice cracked and rumbled high above, showering crystals across the dais. We needed no further encouragement. We slipped and slid down the frozen ridge and fled the way I'd come, heading for the narrow fissure between cliffs. It was going to be a close race, and a tight squeeze with Christian's shoulders, and with an avalanche chasing us.
Why'd you scream anyway?
He shouted at me over the rumbling. She startled me is all! I shouted back.
Bloody great! Next time, put a sock in it, would you?
Neither of us said anything then, focused on trying to outrun being buried alive. I bounced between the walls of the cliffs like a ping-pong ball. Twice I lost my footing and went down. Christian went flying over the top of me, but somehow managed to hang on to the frail queen. The avalanche chased us, growling like dark thunder, crashing from ravine to canyon, spraying the deep fissure with snow. We finally cleared the claustrophobic path through the cliffs, slid on our asses down a steep hill, then raced across the canyon for the towering fortress of black ice.
The Unsealed King's castle.
Christian marveled as we dashed through the towering doors. He looked up, down and around.
I grew up on tales of this place, but I never imagined I'd see it. I thought the closest I'd get to one of the legendary Tuath De was standing next to a portrait. And here I am. Holding the Sealy Queen in the Unsealy King's fortress.
He gave a bitter laugh.
And turning into one of them.
I murmured the same soft command that had opened the tall doors, and heaved a sigh of relief when they slid silently closed on the thundering rush of snow beyond. Would the avalanche I'd started reach the castle? Pile up outside the doors, sealing us in here more securely than any bolt? I waited for Christian to demand to know how I'd shut them, but he was so engrossed in his surroundings he'd not even noticed.
What now?
His fascinated gaze kept sliding between the frail woman in his arms and the interior of the dark fortress. Now we head for the silver in the king's boudoir, I said.
Why? I can't go through, and neither can she.
I can. And I can get help and bring them back to the mirror to talk to you. We'll make plans to get you out, figure out how and where to meet. He cocked his head and studied me a moment.
There's a thing you should know, lass. My truth sensor works just fine here in the Unseelie prison.
So?
What you just said wasn't truth.
I'm going to go through the mirror. Truth? I said impatiently. He nodded. And I'm going to get help and bring them back for you. Truth? He nodded again. Then what the hell is the problem? I had a lot on my mind. Delays were untenable. Standing still, my mind began to think. I needed to keep moving. I couldn't bear to look at the woman in his arms. Couldn't handle thinking what looking at her made me think. His eyes narrowed. They were full black again. There was a time when it would have made me nervous, but I doubted anything would make me nervous ever again. I was beyond stress, beyond fear, beyond reach.
Tell me you plan to save me,
he ordered. That was easy. With each passing day, I understood Jericho better. People didn't ask the right questions, and if you answered enough of their wrong ones, by the time they ever got around to a right one, you could just snap their head off and shut them up. How many times had he done that to me? I was developing a grudging respect for his tactics, especially now that I had something to hide. I plan to save you, I said, and I didn't need a truth detector to hear the ring of sincerity in my voice. And I will do it as quickly as possible. It will be my priority to get you out of here. It would. I needed him more than I'd ever understood.
Truth?
Then what's the problem?
I don't know. Something.
He shifted the queen in his arms. She wore a sparkling white gown. I knew that dress. Who'd selected it for her? Had she chosen it? How and why? I refused to look at her. I snapped my gaze from her dress to Christian's face.
Tell me again why you screamed,
he fished. He was getting too close for comfort, but I knew this game. Barons had taught me well. I was frightened.
Truth? Why?
Oh, for heaven's sake, Christian, I told you already. Are we going to stand here all day while you interrogate me, or are we going to get out of here? Beyond the fortress, the avalanche crashed and roared. It was nothing like the roar I felt building in me. She wasn't what I expected, okay? That was certainly the truth. Even though you told me it was her in the coffin, I expected it to be the Unseelie King. I tossed to get him off the scent. There was just enough sincerity in what I'd said to appease him, but barely.
If you're somehow lying to me,
he warned. He'd do what? By the time he figured out what I was doing, it'd be too late. Besides, I really wasn't someone he wanted to be threatening, no matter who he was turning into or how powerful he was becoming. I'd just found out I was way more terrifying than anything he could possibly be turning into. The king's bedchamber is this way, I said coolly. And don't threaten me. I'm sick of being used and pushed around. Christian dallied. There was no other word for it. He was fascinated by the Unseelie King's fortress, and his Keltar duties as Fey lorekeeper had been bred into him since birth, despite any misgivings he might have about what was happening to him. He took detailed mental notes on everything he saw, to pass on later to his clan. I was glad he didn't have pen or paper, or I might never have gotten him to the mirror.
Look at this, Mac. What do you think it means?
I glanced unwillingly where he pointed. It was a door that was much smaller than the others. There was an inscription above the arch. It was a powerful ward. The king had kept things in there he'd never wanted loosed on the world. The ward had been broken long ago. Great. I just hoped they weren't on my world. I resumed walking, staring straight ahead, retracing my earlier steps. Unlike Christian, I didn't want to see a damn thing. You'll have time to look around when I'm gone, I said.
I'll need to stay close to the silver to know when you return.
Well, move a little faster, okay? We have no idea how time's passing out in the real world. You slow it down, I speed it up.
Maybe we'll split the difference.
Maybe. Would enough time have passed that Barons would be alive again? Standing in the mirror waiting for me? Or had so much time passed that he'd given up, moved on to other tasks? I'd know in a few minutes.
She's not breathing,
he said. Neither are we, I said dryly.
But I think she's alive. I can feel her.
Good. We need her. Through here, I said. Moments later, I stepped into the comforting darkness of the Unseelie King's boudoir, where the dark maker of the Court of Shadows had rested. He'd never slept, and fucked, and dreamed. Jericho wasn't dead on the other side of the mirror, nor was he waiting for me. I assumed that meant we'd been gone a good long time, as humans counted it. Christian made it easy for me. I couldn't have asked for more. He laid her on the king's bed, close to the silver, and tucked furs around her.
She's so cold. You've got to hurry, Mac. We need to get her warm. In my travels, I heard that during the battle between the king and original queen, some of the Seelie were taken captive before the prison walls went up. The Unseelie planned to torture them for all eternity, but legends say the Seelie prisoners died because this place is the antithesis of all they are and drains their life essence.
He gave me a grim look.
I think someone brought the Seelie queen here, put her in that coffin, and left her to die slowly. Uncle Kian said she wasn't really there when she came to see him, but was a projection of herself, as if she was trapped somewhere, focusing all her effort and energy on sending a vision of herself to nudge events around, so we would save her when the time was right. Someone wanted revenge. I think she's been here a long time.
And Valaine was looking like the prime suspect, considering that he'd been lying to me about where she'd been since day one. But how could any of this be? Why would Valaine have had this woman to begin with? How had she ended up in the Seelie Court? The truth was, I was standing in the middle of so many lies, some of them hundreds of thousands of years old, that I didn't know where to begin trying to untangle them. If I pulled on one thread, 10 others would unravel, and I saw little point in trying to make sense of anything now. All I could do was what had to be done. Get them both out of here. The sooner the better. Especially her. Not because she was the queen, but because Christian's legend resonated with me, and I knew it to be true. A Seelie could survive only a finite space of time in here. I doubted a human would survive half that long, and I wasn't entirely sure which she really was. She was dangerously weak. The slight form on the bed barely made a hump. Masses of silvery hair cloaked a body that had deteriorated to that of a slender, undeveloped child. My dreams had been trying to warn me. I'd waited too long. I'd almost been too late. "Look over there," I exclaimed, pointing to the far side of the bed. "What's that on the wall? I think I've seen those symbols before." He was halfway across the bedchamber before that sixth sense of his made him look back over his shoulder. I know, because I was looking over mine. It was too late. I'd already scooped her up and pushed into the silver. She was oddly insubstantial, as if she'd donned physical form to contain the energy of which she was made, and as her life essence evaporated, so did the physicality holding her. Was she beyond saving? I know what he thought. I was the traitor. I was trying to finish the job of killing the queen by forcing her through a mirror only the king and his concubine could pass through. A mirror that killed all other life, including Fae. But that wasn't it at all. I wasn't trying to kill the queen. I knew she wouldn't die. I knew she could go through the mirror. Because the woman in my arms wasn't Avil, queen of the Fae. She was the concubine. That was why I'd screamed. I'd been having a hard enough time dealing with the thought that I was the concubine. As I'd stared into the coffin and recognized her from the White Mansion, it had taken me only a moment to process that if the concubine was lying in the coffin and I could pass through the king's silver, I had a serious problem. The scream had been instinctive, denial from the very marrow in my bones, clawing its way up my throat and past my lips. If she was the concubine, and I could go through the silver too, there was only one other person, and I was using that term very loosely. I could be. "And it's not the concubine, that's for sure," I muttered as I pushed through the silver and slammed into the wall. I'd expected resistance, like in every other silver, but this one, the first ever created, was untainted by Cruz's curse. I turned at the last moment, cradling her in my arms, taking the brunt of the impact on my shoulder. Not a damn thing about this made sense.
"Mac, what are you doing?"
Christian roared, storming toward the mirror. "Don't touch it," I cried. "It will kill you." I didn't want him to think for a minute that it wouldn't and try to come through. It had killed Barons. I had no doubt it would destroy Christian, and he didn't have a get-out-of-death-free card, at least not that I knew of. But as had just become painfully apparent to me, I didn't know much of anything. So maybe he had a whole deck of them. Maybe everyone did but me. Still, I wasn't going to count on it. I needed him. More than ever before, I needed the Shisadu contained, and he was one of the five necessary to do it. I understood why it played with me now. He stopped inches from the mirror and peered at me through it.
"Why didn't it kill her? I'll know the truth,"
he warned. I adjusted her in my arms, scooped up a mass of her hair and draped it over my shoulder so it didn't trail the floor and trip me. I stared back through the mirror at him. "Because she's the concubine. That's why I really screamed. I recognized her."
"But I thought you were the conc..."
He gave me a fast once-over.
"But you went through the... But that would mean... Mac?"
I shrugged. I couldn't think of anything to say.
"How'd you know she's the concubine?"
he demanded. "The memory residue of the king and the concubine walks these halls. It's hard not to get lost in them. But I imagine you won't have quite as hard a time as I had, seeing how you aren't quite so... personally involved," I said bitterly. "I have no doubt you'll see her while I'm gone. I still wouldn't look at her. It was too disconcerting. She was frighteningly light, delicate, and very, very cold. I'll be back as soon as I can." We stared at each other.
"I won't believe it,"
he said finally. "It makes too much sense not to be true. There's no record of me being born Christian. The book, it hunts me. I hear it always has."
"Not buying it."
"Give me another explanation."
"Maybe the legends are wrong. Maybe a lot of people can step through the silver. Maybe it's all bluff to keep people from trying."
My heart lurched when he took a step forward. "No, don't. Christian, listen to me. I can't tell you who, but I know you can hear the truth in what I'm saying. I watched the silver kill someone already." He cocked his head, then nodded.
"Aye, lass. I hear truth in that. But why can't you tell me who?"
"It's not my secret to tell."
"You'll tell me one day."
I didn't reply.
"I'm still not buying it."
"Find me an alternative. Any alternative. I'll happily believe it."
"Maybe you're... I don't know. Maybe you're their child somehow,"
he offered. 700,000 plus years later? I'd already considered and discarded that thought. Not only didn't it resonate with my gut feelings, but... it doesn't begin to explain all the things I know and feel and remember, or why the book plays with me, I said. I couldn't explain how I knew, but I wasn't the progeny of the Unseelie King and his concubine. My feelings were far too personal, far too sexual and possessive. Not a child's feelings at all, but a lover's. He shrugged.
"I'll remain here, but hurry back."
"Promise me you won't try to come through, Christian."
"I promise, Mac. But hurry. The longer I'm in here, the more I feel myself... changing."
I nodded. As I turned away with the queen, concubine, woman I'd apparently destroyed worlds for, I couldn't help but wonder where my other parts were. 31. I stared through the front door of Baron's Books and Baubles, uncertain what surprised me more, that the front seating cozy was intact, or that Baron's was sitting there, boots propped on a table surrounded by piles of books, hand-drawn maps tacked to the walls. I couldn't count how many nights I'd sat in exactly the same place and position, digging through books for answers, occasionally staring out the windows at the Dublin night, and waiting for him to appear. I liked to think he was waiting for me to show. I leaned closer, staring in through the glass. He'd refurnished the bookstore. How long had I been gone? There was my magazine rack, my cashier's counter, a new old-fashioned cash register, a small flat-screen TV DVD player that was actually from this decade, and a sound dock for my iPod. There was a new sleek black iPod Nano in the dock. He'd done more than refurnish the place. He might as well have put a mat out that said, "Welcome home, Mac." A bell tinkled as I stepped inside. His head whipped around and he half stood, books sliding to the floor. The last time I'd seen him, he was dead. I stood in the doorway, forgetting to breathe, watching him unfold from the couch in a ripple of animal grace. He crammed the four-story room full, dwarfed it with his presence. For a moment, neither of us spoke. Leave it to Baron's. The world melts down, and he's still dressed like a wealthy business tycoon. His suit was exquisite, his shirt crisp, tie intricately patterned and tastefully muted. Silver glinted at his wrist, that familiar wide cuff decorated with ancient Celtic designs he and Riordan both wore. Even with all my problems, oh, my knees still went weak. I was suddenly back in that basement. My hands were tied to the bed. He was between my legs, but wouldn't give me what I wanted. He used his mouth, then rubbed himself against my clitoris and barely pushed inside me before pulling out. Then his mouth, then him, over and over, watching my eyes the whole time, staring down at me.
"What am I, Mac?"
he'd say. "My world," I'd purr. And mean it. And I was afraid that, even now that I wasn't Priya, I'd be just as out of control in bed with him as I was then. I'd melt, I'd purr, I'd hand him my heart. And I would have no excuse, nothing to blame it on. And if he got up and walked away from me and never came back to my bed, I would never recover. I'd keep waiting for a man like him, and there were no other men like him. I'd have to die old and alone with the greatest sex of my life a painful memory.
"So, you're alive,"
his dark eyes said.
"Pisses me off, the wondering. Do something about that."
"Like what? Can't all be like you, Barons?" His eyes suddenly rushed with shadows, and I couldn't make out a single word. Impatience? Anger? Something ancient and ruthless. Cold eyes regarded me with calculation, as if weighing things against each other, meditating. A word Daddy used to point out was the larger part of premeditation. He'd say,
"Baby, once you start thinking about it, you're working your way toward doing it."
Oh, was there something Barron's was working his way toward doing? I shivered.
"Where the fuck have you been? It's been over a month. Pull a stunt like that again without telling me what you're doing first, and I'm chaining you to my bed when you get back."
Was that supposed to be a deterrent or an incentive? I pictured myself sprawled on my back, his dark head moving between my legs. I imagined Mac 1.0, knowing what I knew now, that in a few months Barons would be doing everything a man could do to a woman in bed. Would she have run screaming or torn off her clothes right then and there? As he stepped around the high-back Chesterfield, he spotted the slight woman in my arms, her silvery hair trailing the floor. He looked incredulous, which, for Jericho, meant his head took on a slight cant and his eyes narrowed.
"Where the hell did you find her?"
I shoved the fragile body into his arms. I'd touched her all I ever wanted to. My feelings were too complex to sort out. In the Unseelie prison, in a tomb of ice...
"Valaine, that fuck. I knew he was a traitor."
I sighed. That meant Jericho thought she was the queen, too. And he should know. He'd spent time at her court. But I knew she was the concubine. So who had actually died in the Unseelie King's boudoir eons ago? Had anyone? The concubine hadn't killed herself. How had she gotten from the Silvers into Faerie and ended up one day becoming the current queen? Had Valaine lied to me? Or had they all drunk from the cauldron so many times that the Fae didn't have one bit of their own history right? Maybe someone had sabotaged their written records.
How did you get her out of there? The Silvers should have killed her.
Apparently the queen has the same kind of immunity to the Silver that she has to the Shisadu. I was pleasantly surprised by how smoothly I lied. Barons has a sharp nose for deceit. She can touch both. It looks like the king and queen can't cast spells that the other can't break. The best lies are solidly cemented in known exceptions to the rule, and by her very nature as matriarch and ruler of both courts, the queen was the universal exception to every rule that bound the lessers of the Fae Court. I wasn't above exploiting it to secure my cover until I knew beyond all shadow of a doubt what to make of myself. In his dark gaze, I saw the moment he accepted the logic of my lie. How could I be the Unseelie King? I didn't feel like the king. I felt like Mac with a bunch of memories I couldn't explain. Well, that wasn't the entire truth. There was also that place in my head where I had nifty little things like parasitic runes of ancient origin, and I terminated that line of thought. I didn't feel like taking a tally of all the things I couldn't explain about myself. The list was miserably long. He took her to the sofa, tucked blankets around her, and shoved the sofa closer to the fire and turned it on.
She's freezing. I've half a mind to take her back and let the place finish her off,
he said darkly. We need her.
Maybe.
He sounded unconvinced.
Fucking fairies.
I blinked, and he was no longer by the couch. He was nose to nose with me. My breathing quickened. It was the first time he'd ever put his preternatural speed to full use in front of me. He tucked a strand of hair behind my ear, trailed his fingers down my cheek. He traced the shape of my lips, then let his hand fall away. I wet my lips and looked up at him. The lust I felt when standing so close to him was almost unbearable. I wanted to lean into him. I wanted to pull his head down and kiss him. I wanted to strip and shove him back and be his reverse cowgirl, ride him hard until he made raw, sexy, rough sounds as he came.
How long have you known you were the Unseelie King's concubine?
Though his voice was soft, his words were too precise. Tension shaped his mouth. I knew every nuance of that mouth. Fury was gnawing at him and needed an outlet.
You shoved through that silver with no doubt you'd make it through.
My laughter held a note of hysteria. Oh, if only that was the extent of my problems. Was I a woman obsessed with the woman on the couch? Or was I the male king of the Fae, obsessed with Jericho? I consider myself open-minded about gender preference. Love is love, and who's to say how the body follows the heart? But both of those scenarios were hard for me to accept for myself. Neither fit me like a glove, and sexuality should. When it's right, it feels good on you, like your own skin, and the only thing that felt like skin to me was woman to man. Then there was the whole, oh, gee, I'm the screw-up responsible for this whole mess. No more blaming the Unseelie King for making so many bad decisions and messing up my world. Was I the one who'd messed up theirs? If so, I bore an unbearable amount of guilt. I raked my hair back from my face with both hands. If I kept thinking about it, I was going to lose it. I'm not the concubine, Jericho. I'm afraid I must be some part of the Unseelie King in human form. Not very long, I lied. I recognized things in the White Mansion, and I kept having dreams that made sense only if I was her. I knew there was a way to test it.
You bloody fool. If you'd been wrong, it would have killed you.
But I wasn't wrong.
Obtuse and illogical.
I shrugged. Apparently, I'd been a lot worse than that.
You will never do such an idiotic thing again,
he said, muscles bunching in his jaw. given my track record? I was pretty sure I would. I mean, really, if I was the Unseelie King, the most powerful Fae ever, I'd somehow ended up human and clueless. That meant I was not only evil, obsessed, and destructive, I was inexcusably stupid. He began to circle me, looking me up and down like an exotic in a zoo.
And you thought I was the king. That's why you tried to drag me through it with you. You just can't get enough of killing me, can you? What's the last thing you said to me?
He mocked in falsetto.
What's the worst that can happen? I lead you into some trap and you die for however long it is you go away.
I said nothing. I saw little point in trying to justify myself anymore.
I imagine it got all your little romantic notions a-twitter again, didn't it?
Is a Twitter even a word?
Did you think we were star-crossed lovers, Miss Lane? Did you need that excuse?
He gave me that wolf smile, and I thought, right, star-crossed lovers with a double-edged sword. Because that's what this man was. Sharp, edgy, dangerous, with no safe side. And yes, actually, I had thought we were star-crossed lovers. But I wasn't about to tell him that. I turned to circle with him, meeting that dark, hostile gaze. I thought we resolved this in the mansion, Jericho. It's Mac.
It's Mac when I'm fucking you. The rest of the time, it's Ms. Lane. Get used to it.
Boundaries, Baron?
Precisely. Where's the king, Ms. Lane?